All right, so we're just working on some things that we feel like will help our football team here over this next few days. And three opponents we could possibly face. We'll try to get some work done on them preliminarily until we know for sure who it is. But really, we're just trying to grind it out here and find ways to improve.
Well, does that just mean trying to split up film three different ways over three potential opponents, or are there other ways?
Well, we have people on our staff that are always working ahead. You know, 1 week, usually 1 week ahead or 2 weeks ahead. In this case, they're working on three teams. So, and we're working on things that we need to work on relative to just the Patriots, no matter who we play. So it's just really a combination of those things.
Is it at all helpful that you played the Bengals before, but you haven't seen the Chiefs or Colts this year?
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, that was, it was one back in October. It's been quite a while. So, I think any time you play a team, you pretty much have to start all over anyway, even if you have some information on them in the background. Enough time has passed between the time we played Cincinnati and now that we still would have a lot of work to do on them.
I know we spoke a little bit about special teams on conference calls earlier in the week, but I just wanted to ask you, as specialists have become better and better, whether it's kind of making the kickoff and rules have changed to make the kickoff less important, and kickers have become better from longer distance, and punters have gotten stronger, are all those hidden yards in special teams that are even harder to come by than they might have been when you were strictly a special teams coach, and does that make them even more vital, those tiny plays that could change a game?
I think it kind of evens out. I mean, their punters are better, our punters are better, their kickers are better, our kickers are, So, I think it's all relative. But, certainly there's a lot more coaching technique, sophistication in the kicking game than what there was, 15, 20, 25 years ago, no question, or 35 years ago when I was coaching special teams. Now, a lot of it's the same, but a lot of it's different, and some of the rules have affected it, and also just the evolution of seeing things work, seeing, schemes evolve, and for lack of a better word, copycatting them. As we've talked about before, when I came into the league, there was no, as an example, there was no spread punt. I mean, nobody would spread, and if they did, the first thing anybody would do would rush them, and that was because the snappers weren't involved in the protection, so you were a guy short. Now, every team snapper is involved in the protection. Every team spread punts, even against rushes, and that really, I would say, really started when the Aussie went to Dallas, and they did it with Steve, and other people saw it and found guys and started teaching and got comfortable with it. So, that's a scheme and a thing that's involved. I'm not saying the snappers are that much better now than they were, in the 70s or in the early 80s. But once that became, the Cardinals did it, there were two or three teams that were doing it. And then once that was effective, then everybody was looking at it saying, well, then, we should be able to find somebody who can do that. Gives us an opportunity to have two split guys and not get them held up from a tight position on the line of scrimmage. So I think there are other things like that, other aspects of the game that have schematically evolved, just like we've seen on offense and defense, whether it be blitz zone schemes or, multiple receiver sets or, so forth and so on, that's a little bit of an evolution and sophistication of the game.
My last follow-on special teams is whether it's Jacoby Jones in the Super Bowl last year or the plays that you guys made in 2001 in Pittsburgh and out here, so many postseason games come down to between evenly matched teams, the kicking game. Do you anticipate that over the next few weeks we'll be seeing the same things as we always do when games turning on that?
Yeah, well, who knows what the difference in a game and a close game is going to be, but certainly the kicking game is always an important part of every game and any close game, especially when you have points involved, which we have with the field goals, but potentially, in a return game or a block kick or, that type of thing. So those are kind of bonus points. I don't think you ever go into the game thinking, we're going to get 7 points, from our punt return team, or we're going to get 7 points from our kickoff coverage team to recover a fumble and run back for a touchdown. Those are kind of bonus points that you don't really count on. You hope you get a couple of them over the course of the year, but You know, that's statistically, that's about what it's going to be. So a big play in that area is, you know, a huge play, really, because it's so, it's like bonus points. And, you know, I mean, really, I've always had a great appreciation for the kicking game. I think that, you know, I was fortunate when I grew up, when Coach Harden was the coach at Navy, he emphasized the kicking game a lot. And, you know, plays like the quick kick and some plays in, you know, the return game and so forth that kind of, you know, caught my eye as a kid and always sort of stayed interested in it, had an opportunity to coach it. And I think that, the, you know, it's one of the great things about football is it brings that third, you know, element to the game besides offense and defense. It adds the kicking game, the specialists, the all the different rules and strategical situations that can occur on kickoffs, punts, and field goals, and the fakes, and, you know, all those kind of things, field position plays, that I think that's an integral part of the game. And of course, back when the game was invented, and even back into the, I would say, the 30s and the 40s, where, you know, Nalen at Tennessee and a lot of his disciples followed the old rule of thumb on field position: inside your 10, punt on first down; inside your 20, punt on second down; inside your 30, punt on third down. And you didn't punt on fourth down until you got the ball, you know, outside of the 40-yard line, until you got close to midfield. And you played defense, you played field position. And, of course, we see a lot less kicking now than we saw back then. And, of course, we see the specialists now that we didn't see back then, too. So you had the Sammy Baughs of the world, or all the single-wing tailbacks, for that matter, that were punters first, runners second, and passers third. So, you know, the game, I would say, has gradually taken the emphasis off of that part of the game, but it's still a significant part of the game. And I personally would love to see the kicking game remain as a very integral part of the game, so that the kickoffs are returned and so that extra points are not over 99% converted, because that's not what extra points were when they were initially put into the game, you know, back, you know, 80 years ago, whatever it was.
I'm sorry, would you be in favor of seeing it backed up to me?
Well, I'd be in favor of not seeing it being over a 99% conversion rate. I mean, it's virtually automatic. So that's just not the way the extra point was put into the game. It was an extra point that you actually had to execute, and it was executed by players who were not specialists. They were position players, and it was a lot harder for them to do. The Gino Capoletti's of the world, and, you know, so forth. And they were very good, but it's not like it is now, where it's well over 99%. And so I don't think that's really a very exciting play, because it's so automatic. And I don't know how much excitement there is for the fans in a touchback. I mean, it's one thing if it's a great kick, you know. It's another thing when, you know, let's just say, for example, over half the kicks are out of the end zone. Then I wouldn't really say it's a great kick. It's kind of almost a normal part of the game. So I personally would love to see those plays be the impact plays that they've been. And as you mentioned, where would last year's Super Bowl have been without the 108, 109-yard kickoff return, whatever it was? I mean, the play that that added to the game was a spectacular play. I mean, forget about who you're rooting for, but just as a fan of the game, it was a spectacular play in the game that I think all fans, unless you were a 49er fan, but, you know, that all fans objectively love to see those plays as part of the game.
You have such a great voice and command, and you've been doing it for so long. I know that generally, you know, you want to just coach the football team, but will there be a point in your career when you say, I want to help at the level where I can help to shape the way things are going?
Well, right now I'm just trying to help our football team prepare for the play. I'm not here to, like, solve the world's problems. I'm just trying to win a football game.
Were punts on first down common?
Sure. All right. Well, inside your 10. Yeah, inside your 10, sure.
I had no idea.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I was surprised the hell out of
that. Was like Nalen's, that was his, I mean, it was a rule. I mean, there was no decision. It was, you're inside your 10, punting on first down, playing defense. Wouldn't take a chance on turning the ball over in bad field position. Now, you know, again, it was a running game, and there was less first downs and less But no, that was very, and again, all his disciples, which were numerous, that, yeah, I would say back in the, you know, 20s, 30s. You know, and then you get the players like, you know, Don Hutson, that, I mean, everybody talks about how great of a receiver he was, and he was. He was the first great receiver in the National Football League. He was a great kicker, too. You know, and that's was another important part of his job, that back in those days, you know, you had to have a kicker, you had to have a punter, and you needed, I mean, a punter was probably the most important position on a lot of teams. So that kind of took priority over, like I said, passing or running for the single wing tailbacks, for sure.
Bill, when a little bit of a tangent, but when you guys hired Bill O'Brien, he kind of took a chance to come here and, you know, took the pay cut and on. Did you see NFL head coaching potential in him at that time, or did you just see him develop and develop over time in your organization and continually?
All right. Well, I mean, I love Billy O'Brien. I mean, right now, really, we're on the playoffs and, you know, our situation. So I don't think it's appropriate for me to comment on another coach or another team. I don't know what team we're talking about here.
Coach, what are some of the big major differences, if any, of the bye week process during the regular season opposed to a bye in a playoff situation?
Well, there's one huge major difference. We know who we play. We know who we're playing. You have a bye week in a regular season, you know who the next opponent is, you know who the one is after that, and you know when you're playing them and who you're playing, when you're playing them, what the sequence is. We have no idea. I mean, that would be the number one huge major difference. Obviously, the point in the season that we're at is different than, you know, when you have buys during the regular season, which fluctuates from year to year or team to team depending on when they fall. But the opponent is, that's number one.
You mentioned not being able to count on getting 7 points out of your special teams on a week-to-week basis, but was there something about that 2001 team that maybe gave you an idea that, you know, again, you can't count on it, but there was something different about that team in terms of their special teams ability?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, anytime you have a unit on your team that's playing well, you hope you're going to get production from them, whether it's your offense scoring a lot of points, whether it's your defense, you know, creating turnovers and scoring points, whether it's your special teams creating field position or scoring points. So, I mean, I'm not saying that they don't impact the game, or that, I mean, you can make a big play in the kicking game and it not result in actual points on that play, but it could lead to points like Garrett's returns did. I mean, those weren't scoring plays, but they led to points. So, or vice versa, you know, it could be it's no different than having a, you know, good kickoff coverage play, and then you go down there and make a stop on defense, and now you get the ball back at midfield, and, you know, you're knocking on the door again. I mean, kind of like what happened in the Baltimore game when we made the fourth down stop, then we punted, then they returned it, and then they were on, like, I don't know, a 35-yard line or whatever it was. Just saying that, you know, it's hard to create, you know, runs in football. You know, you see them all the time in basketball as an example, but in football, they're harder to create. But, you know, the way you create them is you score, you have a good kickoff coverage play, then you get a stop or a turnover on defense, then you score again, then you have another good kickoff coverage play. I mean, you know, that gives you an opportunity to, you know, to be able to string a few points together. And conversely, if you can make a play on the kickoff return, it really does a lot to negate your opponent from being able to create that momentum. I mean, even if you don't score, if you have a good return, you know, you make a first down or you don't make a first down, you punt the ball to them, they're 80 yards away from the goal line. I mean, statistically, you know, that's a hard place to score from. I mean, not that we don't see those drives, but percentage-wise, it's a hard place to score from, 80, 85 yards away from the goal line. So, you know, I think those plays are huge momentum plays, and they're in the field position eventually, you know, statistically will result in the point differential. So they're huge plays. But they don't always result in scores. But I'm just saying the ones that do result in scores, interceptions for touchdowns, fumbles for touchdowns, kick returns for touchdowns, block punts for touchdowns, are, you know, at the end of the year. I mean, how many of those are there on average in the league? You know, a couple a team. So, you know, if you get one, that's, you know, it's points that you generally don't get. So it's great to get them.
Bill, do you coach when the right time is to take a risk. Like you said, with the touchback, it's so common that, you know, somebody's 8 yards deep in the end zone, now might be the right time or the right look. Do you coach, you and Scott coach that?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, of course we do. We definitely, yeah, it's not just do whatever you feel like doing.
Trust the kicker's instinct. I mean,
no, but I would say that, you know, the way it is in the National Football League now, I would say for the most part, if you, you know, have confidence in your returner and your kickoff return team, you know, what's the downside to bringing it out? They get you on the 15, they get you on the 16, they get, you know, wherever they get you. You don't get back to the 20-yard line. So you lose a couple yards of field position, whatever that's going to be, 3, 4, 5 yards. But you get the opportunity to make a big play. You know, you get an opportunity to get the ball to your returner, and if you feel confident about your, you know, your return team, then, you know, that's what you're willing to risk. You're willing to risk a couple yards of field position for an opportunity to return. Now, the other thing I would say that is a little bit overrated, in my opinion, is how deep the ball is in the end zone. You know, everybody wants to talk about, well, it's 3 yards deep, it's 4 yards deep, it's 7 yards deep, it's 2 yards deep. Well, I mean, that's true and that's great, but that doesn't say anything about the amount of time the ball is in the air. The hang time of the kick is, to me, more important than the depth of the kick. So, I mean, you put a ball 9 yards deep in the end zone with 3/8 hang time, I mean, I don't see any problem bringing that out. You know, you put a ball 1 yard deep in the end zone with 4 or 5 hang time, I mean, you know, that's a whole different ball game. So, again, that's where it comes into judgment by your returners, by your the short returner who's helping your deep returner, you know, gauge how deep he is, how long the ball's in the air, and, again, how fast the coverage team is. I mean, not all teams cover at quite the same rate. Some teams have, you know, faster guys. Some teams have bigger guys, you know, more linebacker, tight end, you know, fullback types. Other teams have more, you know, DB, safety, corner types, and that affects the work. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that come into play there, but I think that the general rule of bringing a ball out of the end zone or not is, to me, I think saying how deep it is in the end zone is missing 50% of the boat. I think that the hang time of the kick is as much, if not more, important than the depth of the kick. And I would say, to a certain extent, also, where the returner has to go to get the ball, because it's another thing for the returner to have to run sideways and handle the ball versus being able to catch the ball coming straight ahead, step into it, and create his momentum back up the field, which, again, a good returner can negate or pick up, I would say, you know, some extra yardage there by his timing of the catch and his momentum going forward versus catching up over his shoulder or going sideways or going backwards or, you know, whatever it is, then that's just like added hang time.
You talked on Monday a little bit about roster building and, you know, when you bring guys in, you never quite know how it's going to work out. And I assume in a broader sense, when you put a team together, although you make a lot of moves, you just never know what the makeup of that team is going to turn out to be. When is that a learning process throughout the season and, you know, all of the on and off field stuff that's happened with this roster? It seems like they've weathered it a lot better than maybe, you know, the 09 team comes to mind for me, that one didn't really deal with, you know, distractions and things like that as well as this year's team maybe has.
Well, I think it's an ongoing process. I think it starts the first day of OTAs and first day of training camp and goes all the way through the season. And your roster is constantly evolving. Even if it isn't evolving, it's evolving because of your younger players as they spend more time on the roster and their role becomes, let's just say, bigger in some cases, not all. Or as the roles shift on your team from week to week or through the course of the season based on whether it be injuries or performance or whatever it happens to be, that it's constantly evolving and your chemistry and your team relationships are changing throughout the course of the year. So when do you know what it is? I don't know. I'd say certainly you know a lot more by mid-season than you know in May or August or September, let's put it that way, because you've been through more. You've been more battle-tested. You've been through more weeks of preparation. You've been through more real games, regular season games. You've been through, you know, more whatever ups and downs, whatever challenges your team faces over that period of time, which every team faces a number of them. You get a better feel for how individually and collectively they'll deal with those. So I don't know if there's a set date, but you certainly know a lot more about your team I would say in mid-season, let's just call it the eighth game, seventh, eighth game, whatever that is, end of October, early November, than what you know in September or August or the spring, which is why, you know, so many of the early predictions are usually so far wrong because nobody knows. I mean, it's see teams that finish at the bottom of the league 1 year, finish at the top of the league next year, and see teams that finish at the top of the year last year, finish at the bottom of the league next year. And that's because of so many, you know, changes and variables that occur during a football season that until they occur, you just don't know how it's going to go.
Talking about predictions, do you assume, I think from the outside, we presume that you would pretty much have a good feel for whatever will happen in these four games this weekend?
No. I mean, I don't think anybody, I mean, how can you? You look at the game, look at last weekend. I mean, I don't know. I saw something where Pittsburgh had like a 1% chance of being in the playoffs or whatever it was, some ridiculously low number. And yet they were within however close you want to call it to being in the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
I mean, or a missed field goal or, I mean, you know, however you want to slice it, however much that field goal missed by, I don't know, a foot or whatever it was. So, I mean, nobody knows. The league's so competitive that, you know, look, it isn't even who has the better team. It's just who plays better. Who plays better on that day, how those two teams match up, and who plays better in that one competitive situation. It's not 4 out of 7 or 2 out of 3 or anything else. You get one opportunity to do it, and whatever team can perform better on that day moves on. And that's – who knows who that's going to be.
Your final question?
Bill, with the play-action pass and the effectiveness of it, selling the run to the defense and Tom's ability to do that, to carry out the play fake, to get them to buy it, has that always been a thing he's done well? And who in comparison comes to mind as quarterbacks who really sold the run before dropping back to throw?
You know, I think that's an interesting question. I would say, you know, a lot of some defensive play calling is just based on whether or not you think they're going to run. Even if they don't run, if you think they're going to run, that makes you vulnerable to some aspects of the passing game. I would say that most defensive players get their keys from the offensive line and the tight end. Now, unless there's no fake at all, which sometimes you see a quarterback fake this way and the back go the other way, and like, what, you know, what's the point? But if there's any kind of legitimate mesh at all, I would say that the bigger key to the play is the action of the offensive line and the tight end more so than the quarterback in the back. Although the quarterback in the back can certainly help the play, I'm not saying that. But no matter what they do, if it's not tied in with the line of scrimmage, the pad level, the offensive line, and the aggressive nature of their, like it would be in a running play, then... You know, I think that the two just don't mesh, and a good defensive player will be able to recognize that. So it's a combination of all those things. You know, part of play action is throwing the ball when you think they're going to run it or when they think you're going to run it. Part of it is the companion of the play action to the running game. Part of it's the execution of the offensive line / tight ends with the run blocking, and part of it is the quarterback, running back, mesh, action, whatever you want to call it. And so I think all those things are, you know, come into play. I mean, you can have the best run action in the world on 2nd and 20, you know, and I don't know how many defensive players are going to go, you know, flying up in there. You could have not very good action on 4th and inches, and you probably get a lot of guys up there, even if it isn't a great fake, you know. So I think there's a lot of different variables on that. I think one of the key things on play action that's a, you know, a critical part of the play is just who are you trying to fake? You know, who are you trying to fake? Are you trying to stop the pass rush? Or are you trying to get a particular player, a safety or a linebacker, or a deep field player, like on a flea flicker as an example? Are you trying to get somebody there to react, and then you have a complementary part of the pattern that attacks that area of the defense? So, I think if you're trying to stop the pass rush by play action, then that's You know, one thing, if you're trying to affect a linebacker or a safety to come up, then you want to have maybe the type of fake that you think will get him to react based on what you've seen on film or based on the play that you're running that, you know, is marries up with that action. And then you want some type of complementary route to, you know, to try to take advantage of that reaction that you hope that you get. So, and then there's all the misdirection plays where you try to get everybody go this way, so somebody goes back the other way, whether that's an over route or a crossing route or a fake crossing route that comes back the other way or some kind of bootleg or, you know, whatever it happens to be, but it's kind of the, you know, a little bit of the same. So, again, what it comes down to on play action, I think for me in the game planning is, okay, what are we trying to do here? You know, what's the purpose of the play? We're trying to affect this guy, affect that guy, affect the pass rush, trying to get him to flow, trying to get him to, you know, what are we trying to get out of it? And then depending on what you're trying to get, then I think that determines what type of play you want to design. All right. Thank you.